Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
We got some breaking news this morning. Fresh off last night's blowout win over the Jets, the Patriots just got a little better. They reportedly acquired Falcons wide receiver Mohamed Sanu in exchange for a second round pick. They needed a wide receiver desperately. Now they have one. CC, what do you make of the deal?
Well, who is Mohamed Sanu? He's a great guy. He's well respected around the league, a good route runner. He's a big physical guy, has played some special teams in the past. He's got a background. He came from Rutgers. Coach Belichick has he loves players from Rutgers. There's a number of players from Rutgers on the roster. He also fills the void for Josh Gordon. To me, it lets me know that the Josh Gordon injury is a little more severe. Well, why? Well, why'd they go after a big receiver compared to the small guys that they have? They have three small guys now outside of Edelman. The three small guys will play the Z receiver, which is to the tight end side. Edelman will continue to play the slot. Ben Watson, as we saw last night, will rejuvenate that tight end position. He is a good blocker. He is an ample receiver. Great guy to have in the locker room. So Mohamed Sanu will help have that physical presence, and he's a great guy. I'm surprised, San Francisco 49ers, because Sanu had played with Kyle Shanahan before in that Atlanta offense. 49ers need a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So Bill Belichick, I keep telling you guys, the whole league, all 31 teams, is tilted right in his bosom. People might say, well, that's a second round pick. They got a great season. So would you give up a second round pick to ensure that you have a dependable wide receiver, a good route runner, a big body, someone for Tom Brady to be able to get him his seventh Super Bowl? So that's what Bill Belichick in the front office and the Patriots. While everyone else is sitting there out talking about, oh, Sam Darnold, he's seeing ghosts. He's out there realizing that team last night is still not good enough. He's trying to improve why we're sleeping. Classic Patriots move.
Last year, Sanu, 800 yards, 4 touchdowns. This year's numbers down, but the whole team's numbers are down in Atlanta because they're having such a miserable season. He becomes a... Last night, they were... Their number two option was Jacoby Myers, an undrafted kid who, by the way, played well in the preseason and maybe one day is going to turn into a really legitimate NFL player. But
yes.
Now you've got a guy with a real track record. People will remember him in Cincinnati, I would imagine. He alongside A.J. Green. Then he goes to Atlanta. He plays alongside Julio Jones. He'd kind of been X'd out of his spot a bit by Calvin Ridley. But he's 6'2", a guy with reliable hands. Chris talked about his skills as a receiver. But when you're matching up with New England now, it is Philip Dorsett. We know what he is. Josh Gordon, in a negative way, we kind of don't know what he is right now, mm-hmm. and he's dealing with injuries. This was their biggest position of need that was at a position they could help themselves. And by that, I mean, you might say their offensive line is their biggest position need.
Where are they going to get?
There's no team trading quality offensive linemen. Even teams that are tanking can't trade quality
offensive linemen. If somebody trades you an offensive lineman right in there, buyer beware.
Yes, exactly. Because even teams that are bad, they got to keep their quarterback healthy. They usually have a young quarterback they're trying to develop. They're not going to trade you quality offensive linemen. So Mohamed Sanu for what will be what? The 63rd pick of the draft? The 64th pick of the draft? Probably depending on where the Patriots finish the regular season. It's great value at the best position of need for them. And yeah, once again, the Patriots get better midway through the season.
Put to bed the myth for us that they're going to need some time for Brady and Sanu to get on the same page. Or are they both veteran enough that he can play Sunday, they go out there, and they can right away develop some semblance
Sanu's
of chemistry?
Sanu's a really smart guy. I know the wide receiver coach that coached him there in Atlanta. He always speaks very, very highly of him. Guys in the locker room really respect him. What they'll do is they'll get him up to speed. It's easy to get guys that you like up to speed because you don't mind spending time with them. If they were willing to, when Josh came there, get him up to speed, which they did, hadn't been known as a great guy, hadn't been dependable. A.B., can't think of him as a great guy. They brought him up to speed. You can believe they'll have a package for him, Jenna. And also, be careful. The Patriots, the trick plays
play,
now.
Man, he's
Duke
got
can
a
throw
hell
the
of
ball.
An arm.
I think he's lefty, too.
Yeah.
He's a lefty. So watch the reverses. Watch him throwing the ball and everything. So Mohamed Sanu will be a very, very close friend. Probably tomorrow he'll move into the locker next to Tom Brady.
Yeah.
But they'll have a package of probably 15 to 25 plays the first couple weeks to get him acclimated, get him up to speed.
And that trick play thing is a real thing. For the Patriots, we've seen them use it in the playoffs where it seems like in every Super Bowl they play, someone other than Tom Brady throws a pass. Obviously, in the Philly Super Bowl, Brady famously dropped that pass. Mohamed Sanu has a great arm, and that is something that not immediately, I don't think they'll use it this week against Cleveland, but at some point, if the Patriots offense is stalling, all of a sudden you see it looks like a double reverse, and then Mohamed Sanu is throwing the ball to a wide-open Edelman. I'm already having nightmares about it.
Nick's stressed out this morning.
Of course. Listen, of course, the Patriots, they're 6-0. They're 7-0. They got one of the greatest defenses of all time.
No, I'm happy.
Why not add another wide receiver?
Yeah, somebody's good at their job.
Yeah, Atlanta. Yeah, of course. Just help them out, Atlanta.
We got to take a
Kansas
break.
City.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. Back here, first things first, look who's here. 11-time NBA All-Star Chris Bosh joins the show.
We had to do it.
What's up, man?
Appreciate it, man.
We had to do it, man. I got so tired of this dude calling himself an expert. I said, I'm getting ready to bring in one, import a big one. 6'10"? Your official height?
Yeah, 6'10".
Okay.
I mean,
even
you know,
with
now
the,
No, come on.
What would the new ones be?
The new one, it'd be 6'10 still.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because these are your broadcasting shoes. You don't have to take the shoes off of that.
Yeah,
16.
I'm good. Yeah,
okay.
16.
And I know he's not in yet, but no matter, I don't know what Michael Jordan would say, but Hall of Famer Chris Bosh.
On his way.
Thank you.
Yeah, Michael Jordan said there ain't nobody a Hall of Famer.
Well, dude's still playing in the game. He ain't a Hall of Famer yet.
Okay.
Yeah, Steph Curry's got a long, nice career.
Way to go. He can have some MVP.
Not a long way to go. Just a nice, long career. More bodies of work to do.
Uh-huh.
All right, Chris, let's talk about the NBA season, which opens tonight. And while all eyes were focused on the Pelicans-Raptors game to see the debut of one Zion Williamson, those eyes will now need to focus elsewhere. We learned Zion's out 6 to 8 weeks with a torn meniscus, so that timetable puts him back in mid-December. Now, in 4 preseason games, Zion averaged 23 points while shooting 71% from the floor.
Ooh.
Chris, you concerned that injuries are going to keep Zion from reaching that superstar status? Hasn't played a game yet, might already need surgery.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough thing. First and foremost, you know, you want to be out there playing. We haven't seen him much on the court yet. He's had a phenomenal preseason, showing his athleticism, being with the team, getting that young group ready. But, yeah, you got to be concerned because injury can, we've seen injury derail many careers, and he's at that age to where he doesn't even know how to really, you know, get his body ready for the game. This is a different beast, a different game. We haven't seen him much at the collegiate level, and we haven't seen him much at the pro level. And, you know, knees, that's a very, very serious thing. So, you know, he should take it easy for the next 8 weeks, get his body right, but also, you know, learn the mechanics of the body and get that extra training and stretching and dietary and all that stuff. That's what he should work on for the next 2 months.
So much of this is really concerning for me. Also, while I don't pretend to be a medical expert, I did a lot of reading on the meniscus yesterday, and it seems like there's two ways to treat a meniscus injury. One is a trim, and one is to sew it.
Right.
Now, the trim gets you back on the court faster. It's more likely to lead to long-term problems.
Yep, just like any other trim.
Right.
Able to get you in.
Right.
Yeah.
Sewing it is the way to fix it, in theory, permanently or long-term, but you're out 3 to 4 months. Oddly enough, I would be less concerned for Zion if they were saying he's out 3 to 4 months, because what this 6 to 8 weeks tells me is they're going to trim it, which could lead to even more issues long-term in his career. In fact, I think it's your teammate, Dwayne Wade, that said having the meniscus trimmed is what led to his long-term knee issues.
If he could do it over again, he would do it differently.
He would have had it sewn and he would have been out. He banged knees in summer league, so we didn't get to see him play then. Mm-hmm. You mentioned he turned his ankle in college. He missed time then. And now we're not going to see him the first couple months of the season. I hate this for the player, and I hate this for the league. The NBA is so unique in this regard. Can't miss guys in the NBA, they almost never miss, unless because of injury. It is so different than baseball or football, where guys highly touted number one overall picks. Man, sometimes in baseball, they never have a real major league career. And in football, sometimes they never pan out, right? Yeah, in the NBA, guys that are projected like Zion become multiple-time All-Stars, usually go on a Hall of Fame track like Chris Bosh. The only thing that I can see derailing him is injury. And he's already hurt. He's already having a surgery, Chris. It makes me anxious for him and for his future.
Well, this is what he's going to have to make up his mind to. And he doesn't know anything about the pro game. Bosh has said it before. You have to understand not only your body, how special it is. There's some special athletes playing in the NBA. Russell Westbrook, I would say, is the most athletic point guard we've ever seen. LeBron is the most athletic three that we've ever seen. And Zion, he's the most athletic 6'5 guy that we've seen. But Russ, last three preseasons, Russ has had a procedure every year with his knees. Why has Russ suffered? Not only his health, he can't get up and down the court, he can't explode, you can't do it as frequent, but because he don't have a jump shot. So for me, the most two important things become his weight, getting an ideal playing weight, I believe is around 260 right now. Now we have to experiment with it. He's a big boned guy. He's got a big rear end on him. So he is not a 220 guy. If a guy came into the league and was too thin, Chris Bosh out of G-Tech, we got to put some weight on him. Zion, too big, got to take some weight off of him. We're all trying to find that right weight. The next thing becomes most important, he's got to develop a jump shot, intermediate shot, because that takes pressure off him trying to get to the hole. Where does he use his most athleticism? Trying to get past a guy and trying to finish at the rim. If you can't shoot, then it puts so much stress on the rest of your body trying to get in the lane, trying to elevate. So as we watch him develop, as we watch what is his ideal playing weight, we need to watch the fundamentals. The difference between the good players and the great ones are they don't have holes in their game. They can dribble with their left and their right. They can finish at the hole with their left and their right. Those are the things, Zion, that we should be concerned about. The knee issue, I believe, will work itself out.
But, Chris, you also have to look at this from the Pelicans' perspective. They've got this amazing new toy that everybody wanted. They're desperate to get it out there and let people come pay money to come see it. Now they have this question. Do you try to rehab it? Do you fix it and get him back in 6 to 8 weeks? Mm-hmm. Do you make him sit out even longer so he's back for the long haul? Is it the player's decision? Will he have some say in how he wants to go as far as recovery and treatment?
He does, but I think we're at a new day and age in the league where the teams are more aware. I think we've seen enough injuries derail careers, and we've seen enough injuries go from a small thing to a big thing and ended up, you know, just being nagging for guys for years and years. They don't do well for the organization. Organization can't sell tickets. They don't win games. I think they're going to take it very, very easily, very slowly. I mean, I remember Blake Griffin, and he missed his whole entire rookie year.
Blew out his knee.
Yeah, blew out his knee. Now, we don't know what exactly happened. Could he have played that year? I'm sure, because he's a young man. He could have recovered quickly. But in this case, I'm pretty sure that the Pelicans have everything on deck. They're outsourcing medical staff to help out with this situation. And, you know, as long as they take it as a serious situation and make sure he heals properly, that's the most important thing.
This is where I think it's great for the Pelicans that David Griffin's the man in charge. His time horizon is not 12 months, it's 12 years. He's thinking about the long-term health of the team, and those season tickets already been sold. Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer for the people who paid for him, but remember the clip of the ticket office when they won the lottery. Like, that money is already in the cash register. managers, so to speak. I am curious, though, even though you and Zion, obviously, drastically different bodies, when he does come back, there are going to be times where he has to guard guys on the block. He's going to be undersized in that regard, but obviously he can jump out the gym. When someone, even in today's NBA, people still post up occasionally. When guys post up, where's it putting the stress on his body? Where are the pressure points there? Because we know weak side flying across the court, getting a block, he can do that. But when he has to guard a guy one-on-one, especially a guy taller than him, mm-hmm. when you had to deal with a guy who's maybe a little thicker than you, where's the pressure points on his body in that regard?
I mean, it's more so upper body. You have to have tremendous upper body strength just to be able to hold down in the post. It gets tricky when you start moving left to right. That's why the knees are so serious, you know. We never really talk about the extremities, you know, too much, but knees and ankles in basketball, and I'm sure football
those are your money
too.
Makers.
Yeah, you have to be able to move around. So, you know, I implore them to just continue to stay serious. And as a young guy, he's going to want to play again. I'm sure he could probably dunk right now, you know, yep. a day after surgery. But he's going to have to take his time. They're definitely going to take their time. And they just need to make sure, like I keep saying, he heals all the way properly. And, you know, there will be plenty of games in his career, you know, to go forward.
And see, you were concerned about his weight, the weight while rehabbing. You know what I mean? Like the ability to stay in the right shape while he's not able to run, do the cardio, all
Welcome
those
to
things.
Welcome to the pros, man.
Yeah. All you do is have game. Time, nice restaurants, fancy cigars, fine bottles of wine. Yeah. All right? It's going to be tough
yeah.
being
Especially
rich and losing weight.
Too,
oh, man, them beignets.
It is now time for Nick's favorite part of the show, Nick makes a list. Today, you are ranking the best teams in the NBA. Nick, go for it.
All right, as I often do, I'm going to do seven here. To me, there are seven legitimate contenders for the NBA championship. I'm not including Golden State and Brooklyn because this is as presently constituted. Obviously, if KD comes back early, if Steph comes back early,
you're already off to a bad start because Jenna and I did our preliminary list and we have eight teams. Because Golden State, with their reputation, they should be on there. That's just what we did this
Okay,
week.
Well, if there was an eight, we would put Golden State there. Instead, you're going to say you have real issue because of who I have number seven.
Let me see.
Number seven is the Los Angeles Clippers. I think the Clippers are a good team,
wow.
but a massively overvalued in Vegas when people say they are the championship favorites. How could you not love the additions of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George? I understand that. And they will have one of the greatest perimeter defenses we've seen in modern NBA history. They do not have rim protection. And when Paul George is out, and by the way, he's out until November at least, double shoulder surgery this offseason, I think they're going to struggle to find offense. By the end of the year, we will see. But the Clippers, while a very, very good team, I don't think they are close to the favorites out west. I got them.
Yeah, there's only
seven.
Three teams in the NBA that do have rim protection. When you start a list and the Clippers are number seven, right. let me give you time to work on your thing.
Okay,
go ahead.
Where do we have him on ours? Oh, we got the Clippers.
We're
going to
do it at the end.
Number two.
We're going to do them at the end. Yes.
Number six. The Utah Jazz, the deepest starting lineup in the NBA, Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, who is a candidate for most improved player, a candidate to be an all-NBA guy, Bojan Bogdanovic, one of the best offseason additions. Mm-hmm. You already had Joe Ingles, and we know you have Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert. That is an outstanding yep. starting five. They have as good of a home court advantage as any team in the NBA outside of Denver. Utah, while I understand if people are skeptical of them come the postseason, in the regular season, they will be a juggernaut. They're number six.
They're going to win a lot of games, and the problem becomes in the postseason. They're going to be a tough out. So how much energy are you going to have to exert to be able to knock them out? So I do like them being on the list.
And which of these teams in the West, you're going to see five teams in the West out here, are going to be playing each other in the first round mm-hmm. right. because you have five outstanding teams out West. Number five, the Denver Nuggets. Denver last year, the two seed, Nikola Jokic, mm-hmm. even for skeptics such as myself, he was really outstanding offensively in that playoff run, in that game that seemingly went to 11 overtimes. He played almost every minute and showed that the weight wasn't going to hold him back. They are the biggest candidate to me, C, for a major midseason addition. They have the assets and the cap situation where they could add an all-star midseason. I've got Denver at number
five.
You
talked about Utah having the best start in five. Denver and the Clippers have the most depth. I'm talking about 1 to 12. deeper than any other team. So I like Denver, and I think the experience they got last year in the postseason makes them another tough out in that Western
Absolutely.
Conference.
Absolutely. Number four is the Philadelphia 76ers. We thought they would be the best defensive team in basketball until we saw with Kawhi and Paul George coming together. They will certainly be the best defensive team out East. The only guy that can slow down Joel Embiid in the Eastern Conference has been Al Horford. They are now on the same team. The only reason they are not higher is I got to see it from Ben Simmons before I believe in it. I'm now on your corner with that. But the Sixers should be excellent once again.
Yeah, Jenna, we have the Sixers at number three. We have them coming out of the Eastern Conference and having our number one team in the finals. We won't reveal that until you get to the end of this. But I do like the Sixers.
Number three, the Houston Rockets. How can you not like the duo of Harden and Westbrook as far as what it can be? What it will be, we will see. But with the upgrade from Chris Paul at this stage in his career to Russell Westbrook is enormous. James Harden's dropping 40 in a preseason game, which isn't a thing I even knew happened in the NBA anymore. The Rockets and Harden continues his trend of being a top three player in this league. They're number three.
Yeah, they do have two superstars, but I don't believe it works in playoff wins. They're going to have a hard time getting continuity in the playoff. I thought Harden getting 40 was a message to Russ. Well, how does Russ get in? How does Russ get in? So I do think they are a good team, but they're not in our top four.
Number two, the Milwaukee Bucks. I understand they're going to miss Malcolm Brogdon. I think Giannis is going to come back even more motivated given how the final four games of his season played out. They've got everyone back else other than him of note, Middleton, Lopez, George Hill, Eric Bledsoe. We know how good this team was last year, best team in the regular season. They looked like the best team in the playoffs till they ran into the brick wall of Kawhi and the Raptors. That team's now gone. I got the Bucks number two.
Jenna and I think they're the second best team. We do think that they might have the number one record in the NBA because the regular season will be important to them, a lot like last season. But if Kawhi doesn't make that shot, does Milwaukee get through Philadelphia?
Absolutely right. So there's that question from last year. And then number one, it's obvious at this point, they have the best duo in basketball. They still have the best player in basketball. They have the best big man in basketball, the Los Angeles Lakers. The only question to me is Frank Vogel and health, as it is for every team. Health, I have confidence in. Frank Vogel, I'll see. I also think the Kuzma injury, could actually be good for them in this regard. I think Kuzma's best role might be sixth man for them, being the offense off the bench. That's the role he's going to have to come into, given the fact that he's starting the year injured. The Los Angeles Lakers, the best team in basketball and the favorite, to me, to win the NBA
Finals.
Just
out of curiosity, if KD was healthy, where would you have the Nets?
If KD were healthy, I'd have the Nets at number five. Right behind Philadelphia, Houston, Milwaukee, and the Lakers.
If KD's healthy, we're going to bump Houston down. We have them up as far
as
number three.
Okay. Yeah. That's where we have them.
No problem.
That's what we
Good job.
The production meeting.
That was a great meeting.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
After an NBA offseason of predictions and prognostications about who the best team in LA really is tonight, we will get our first look. The NBA season tips off with a much-anticipated matchup between the Lakers and the Clippers. Two biggest winners of the offseason, two teams with the best two odds to win the NBA title. LeBron is entering his 17th season, but he's still as excited as ever.
Open tonight is, I mean, it's great. It's, for me, it's like, I mean, it's like the first day of school, you know. The first day of school, going back to school, laying your clothes out the night before, just that excitement of getting the thing back going. I mean, I love to play the game, and obviously I had the longest layoff of my career, so to be where I'm at physically, mentally, no matter who we opened up against, I think for TV, for you guys, for everybody that, you know, this is part of y'all job to, you know, be hype beast. Tuesday is a great day.
Why?
It's just like he's shocked. Like your high school games were on TV. Yeah, I haven't gotten used to TV yet, bro.
Hey, Chris Bosh, are you buying the Clippers as favorites to win the title ahead of tonight's matchup with the Lakers?
I'm not. I don't think they're the favorites to win. I think they have a tremendous team, but I think we were talking about it earlier with Paul George's shoulder surgeries, him not being able to play the first 10 games of the season at the very least. missing the whole preseason, those things are very, very important. Preseason is very, very important in getting in shape. You're not going to see, I don't think you're going to see him really get into his groove until February, maybe even March. It takes a whole season to come together, and they have a new team, new coach, I mean, not new coaches, new coaching situation. You have to gel together. It takes time for all that stuff, and I think it's just going to be too much time or not enough time in between him coming back, them figuring it out, and then they have to kind of reshuffle the deck because he's a great player once he comes back. So I think it's going to be fascinating just to see how they recoup, you know, in their situation. But, I mean, you know, another injury, you know, it's just it's tough. And if you're going to be the title favorites, Chris, you know, you got to be healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, that's number one, first and foremost. It might play out in the long run. It might be great for them, but for right now, I think being in that Western Conference, you've got to hit the ground running.
Yeah, I know we're reshuffling the deck as far as the NBA. It's not about three anymore. It's about duets. And when you guys came together individually, Dwayne Wade, a champion, LeBron coming from Cleveland, and you from Toronto, one thing they don't talk about as we get ready for the NBA season is sacrifice. Philadelphia Eagles, they might be the most talented team in the NFL, but we don't have the players sacrificing for one another, so they're a great team on paper alone. What about the Clippers and coming together? And you made more sacrifices. I've heard Dwayne Wade talk about it. LeBron has talked about it. No one's game suffered or had to adjust more than yourself. How important is that for the Clippers and that adjustment? Because guys are used to playing their role, and Doc, how does he communicate that to them?
Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest adjustments is going to have to be Lou Will. You know, he's always sixth man into your candidate every year, but he's used to coming in and getting buckets right away. Now, with Paul George out for the first few weeks, he's going to be able to operate. I think they'll be able to figure out a way to score points because he's that talented and that great. But when you get a great player coming back, it's only one ball, and you have to share it, and you have to make sure you get guys open. So those small things are going to be super necessary with their players, setting screens, getting back on defense, being on time, you know, having good leadership, you know, and they have a veteran savvy team. But I tell you one thing, they're going to be scary on the defensive end. They're going to be very exciting.
Yes.
And either way, if they're the favorite or not, they're going to be right there when it's winning time.
But before we get to the Lakers, my concern with the Clippers, you explained very, very well. And I think when you look at the West, you've got five teams plus the Warriors lurking that believe they can win the title. Mm-hmm. Denver was right there, as close as they've been as a franchise, hell, since Melo was playing there and they took Kobe to the 6 in the Western Conference Finals. Utah has as good of a 1-5 starting lineup as any team in the league. We obviously know the Rockets are all in once again, the Lakers and the Clippers. Two of those teams are playing each other in the first round. One of those teams is gone in the first round, which is why the regular season takes on an air of extra importance because being one of those top three seeds, and by the way, even if you're the third seed, you might be facing a Warriors team that has Klay coming back. Mm-hmm. So maybe being one of those top two seeds. I don't think the Clippers can be that. I don't think they can be that because they're going to be without Paul George. But they're saying 10 games, man. Like, if they're saying 10, I would expect 15.
And you got to shake the rust
and
off.
All of that. So now to the Lakers part of it. Now, the Lakers obviously have a totally new roster as well. As far as, I think Kuzma is the only guy left of the rotation players from when LeBron got there.
Yeah.
So it is a totally new team. But the LeBron-Anthony Davis fit, to me, is hand in glove to a degree. How do you see that fitting instantly, and how much of a work in progress do you believe it's going to be?
It's not going to take that long.
Yeah.
I think they're already off to a good start. They're so talented and so great at what they do. You just throw them out there, and that'll take care of itself. I think the parts that they feel that nobody's really talking about is the genius level IQ talent that they have. Danny Green, Rajon Rondo, Avery Bradley, been very good, has a lot of playoff experience.
Yes.
You know, Dwight Howard, number one pick. You know, he's trying to redeem himself in the league. That's going to be huge for them because he's coming in against second team bigs.
Guys.
And, you know, he's a former first round pick, been to the finals, has playoff experience. So I think they'll be, and JaVale McGee as well, rim protection. He's got championships as well. So it's a very, you know, kind of an underrated thing. They're kind of flying under the radar, I guess it's crazy to say. They're flying under the radar a little bit as far as their IQ is concerned. They have a very high level IQ.
KCP is the other play. Kuzma and KCP are the two guys that predate LeBron.
Sure.
Go ahead.
As far as the Lakers go, how important is it for them to treat this season like a marathon? Not come out too strong, not come out too hard. LeBron had a legit offseason for the first time. He's got actual veterans around him. How important is it going to be, Chris, for them to come out and pace themselves so that they are available in May, in April, you know, so that they're all healthy and available?
It's kind of this weird thing in the league. You want to pace yourself, but you want to go at a nice pace. You know, you don't want to say,
what does that look like?
You know, we're going to be fine. I don't, you know, it changes every season. I think in the Lakers situation, they're very deep. Bron's fresh. Mm-hmm. He's had a whole offseason, which hasn't happened in a very long time. You know, he's talking about the first day of school and moving back and forth. He's very excited. But like we were saying, alluding to with the Western Conference, it's going to be more of a sprint than a marathon, as crazy as that sounds.
Yes.
Because every game is going to be important. And, you know, if you're not in that top four, even if you're the number one or number two seed, you might have to play two games in San Antonio.
Right.
You know, and that's not an easy place to play. So, you know, I think they're going to have to find their balance, but at the same time, they're ready to go.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think load management is going to be a much of a key this year, even though we are going to have some teams that are going to have to watch their players. Because NBA players, if I do know one thing, they watch NBA TV. They watch the games, and they will be looking at that, oh, what's the record? So to me, I'm like you. It's not going to be a marathon. You're going to have to run at a quick pace. We saw the guy break 2 hours at the marathon.
In the actual marathon.
This year in the NBA, that load management, be careful. The Clippers, they can get themselves into a situation with Denver, Utah. All these guys got young rosters that they don't have the same questions as far as load management, and they're putting pretty much a healthy young roster out there every night.
And real quick, the NBA tries to backload its schedule for its best teams for after football, so for television reasons. If you look at the Lakers, the softest part of the Lakers' schedule, aside from tonight, is these opening 6 weeks. They have to get out to a good start. Like there's not going to be any, the Lakers are in fifth place come the trade deadline, right, and they're going to climb from there. The schedule gets brutal for them as far as playing marquee matchup after marquee matchup late in the season. They've got it, to me, get off to something like 20-7 to start the season if they're going to be positioned well for the type of seed they want.
Chris Bosch, thanks for hanging out with us. You're back here tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm back
really?
Here tomorrow.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.